Welcome to Let's Talk About It, co-hosted by Maria Wyatt and Scott Dudley. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXORadio.com.
Good morning, Imperial Valley. You're listening to your weekly wellness radio, Let's Talk About It, with Scott and Maria. We are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health and KUBO 88.7 Radio Bilingue. Our phone number here at the station is 337-8874. And also, you can access this podcast at kxoradio.com.
Good morning. Welcome. Our guest today is Jose Lepe. He's a mental health rehabilitation technician 3, right?
Yes.
Which on a 1 to 10 scale is like a 10, right?
And yes.
You can't count any higher than 3.
No, just the 1, 2, and 3. So
you're at the top of the rehab tech tree.
Yes.
Right. Yes. Throwing coconuts down at the lower rehab techs.
Not coconuts, bananas.
Okay, so we're going to talk about multidimensional foster care today, which is a mouthful, and I'm sure it's got like 100 different components in it. But you are the expert. You're working on this every day, right?
Yes. The acronym stands for Multi-Treatment Foster Care Program. I just like to say MTFC. And so what that program is, it's for foster children from 7 to 11 that are in the court system and that also have a behavioral issue. And so...
So let's start. How do you get in the court system if you're 7 to 11? Typically happens,
you are removed by Department of Social Services because your parents have violated some sort of 300 code, which are the codes that they use for the foster care. So maybe they weren't able to provide them with adequate care. Maybe there was
abuse, neglect,
all of that stuff. So what they do is they put them in their custody while their parents are getting rehabilitated so that they can because the goal is for the parents to always reunify with their children.
Okay. So these are children that have been removed from their homes due to something typically that their parents have done that at least provided reasonable suspicion that there may be something unsafe for the kids.
Yes.
That must be very traumatic for the kids to be removed. You know, even though parents might be, and we've seen that, parents might be neglectful or abusive, that's what they know. You know, the kids, that's their parents. And they, even if you remove them, most of the time they don't want to be removed.
It is traumatic for the children because you're taking them from their parents, their home environment, what they know and what they're used to and comfortable with, and then you're placing them in another home with strangers. Because the foster parents are strangers to them at that time when they're placed, and you know, you're starting up all these different rules and things. So it is very traumatic for them. The adjustment for them also, if let's say they're living in Calipat and they're coming to El Centro, just that adjustment from city to city, it's very it's difficult for them. But what this program does is that we try to provide them with a very smooth transition, and we try to provide them with a team that is there for the child.
What are the components of this program? How does it work? Or
the components of this program, and I'll talk about every person in the program, is we have a clinician who is the family therapist, and she works with the reunification plan, because most of the time it's the biological parents, but sometimes it could be the aunt, an uncle, a cousin, but they work with the reunification plan, and they provide them with parenting skills on a weekly basis. And then we have our supervisor who goes, and the beauty of this program, I think, is that the supervisor is the filter between us and the Department of Social Services, because this program is in conjunction with the Department of Social Services. So he is the filter, I say. He's the one that disperses the information to the social worker, to the foster parents, to the biological parents, and to the foster child. He is on call for the foster parent 24 hours, 7 days a week.
Wow.
He also conducts a weekly foster parent support group, which is something different because these foster parents go and they vent and they talk about, you know, what's going on in their homes. He goes to the schools and he talks to the teachers. And then from there we have a social worker from the Department of Social Services that is dedicated to these kids. And we also have a screener, a caller, who trains the MTFC foster parents, because it's just not a regular foster parent. This is an MTFC foster parent that go through specific training. So they know about behavioral modification. They have a behavioral modification system in their home once the child gets there. And this is the same system that the parent in family counseling is also working, so that when the child gets reunified with the parent, they're already working the same system the child had in the foster home.
Nice. 337-8874 is the phone number. You're listening to KUVO. This is Let's Talk About It. We're here with Jose Lepe. He's a mental health rehabilitation tech 3. And we're talking about this multi... Give me the...
MTFC.
MTFC.
Which stands for multi-treatment.
Multi-dimensional treatment for foster care.
Okay, multi-dimensional treatment. So the D is hiding in there.
Yeah,
you're absolutely right.
I always get it.
How long have you guys had this up?
We've had it up. It's coming to a year now. We've had it up for a year. This is a model that was implemented and studied and started in Oregon. I had the privilege of going with the clinical team to Oregon for a week and get the hands-on training by the professionals who implemented this program. And it's evidence-based, because, of course, we love evidence-based here. So it's evidence-based. And it shows a very promising results with these children from 7 to 11. There's different models for each age group. We've just picked the 7 to 11.
What were some of the risks, I guess, of for this age group, for these 7 to 11 people without some sort of support or treatment? What typically could happen that would lend us to make a program to help them and support them through the process?
Well, the thing is...
There's a lot that can happen.
Yeah, there's a lot. But the thing that we were seeing is that these children didn't have enough support. They didn't have the pro-social skills that were needed to go out there. They were having a lot of problems out in the community, out in their schools, maybe even in their home. And so by having this program, we're able to... Well, my job is to show them these pro-social skills in a very positive light.
So these kids were being taken from their homes, which, as we've talked about, you know, kind of creates this upheaval in their lives, and they didn't have much resiliency or much support going into that, so they're put in new schools and new homes, and they start acting out because, that's what you do when you're a kid.
Yeah.
And pretty soon that they're kicked out of school or they're kicked out of this foster placement, and now you're paying
$1,200
a month for them to be in this special, you know, lockdown type of facility or whatever. And
send away to a county, out-of-placement county.
Out-of-placement, I mean.
So the idea is to come in and hold their hands and hold everybody's hands in this process
and
keep the cost down and keep the problems down.
Yeah.
And most, like you said, Maria, prevent. And that's what this program is meant to do. And what I really like about this program is my role as a skills coach. As a skills coach, I am seen by the child in a positive light. I go in there, and what my job to do with them is to teach them skills, but in a fun way. I'm the fun guy. I'm their mentor. I'm their big brother.
You're like the Kobe Bryant guy.
Yeah.
Because you got the skills.
I go in there, I got the skills, and I, you know, teach them, but in a very fun way. I don't talk to teachers. I don't talk to the foster parents. I don't talk to the biological parents, which is a different role from the mental health rehab tech in children's services, because you do talk to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
I just focus on the child to the point that if the child starts acting up in the community, I don't even have to reprimand the child. I just call Florentino, who's my savior, and he's the one that does all that.
So there's no accident that you're wearing blue slacks and a white shirt today?
No, no accident at all.
You kind of just stepped right into your role.
I've stepped into my role. I'm wearing my Converse. I go in there. I get, you know, dirty. And that's what my job entitles me to do, and that's what I'm so privileged, I guess, to do with these children, is to go in there and be a big kid.
Mm-hmm.
And what it does, it creates a very strong therapeutic relationship, because they see me as the person they could go to. They see me as the person that they could confide in. And then what I do is I just, in clinical meetings, just give my input about what's going on with the child. But that's what I love best about this program, is that I'm able to do something with the child, and they see me in that positive light. They don't see me as, oh, here comes my case manager. What did I do wrong? It's like, here comes Jose. We're going to do some fun skill today, and we're going to go out in the community.
What kind of skills are you teaching them?
Well, I'm teaching them.
It's fun. Yeah. I'm like, what are you doing?
What I do is, well, of course, I look at their diagnosis, and we look at their goals, and then what I do in my first session.
Wait, so what does that tell you? I mean,
The diagnosis tells us a lot about the behaviors that are going on, either at home or in the community,
okay.
And so do the treatment goals, what I need to focus on. So, for example, if a child's having an anger outburst and he's throwing objects at home, so maybe the goal is to reduce that behavior. What I go in there is that I go in there and I talk about anger management. We do some, you know, affect modulation. I remember playing emotion bingo with one child, doing I statements, relaxation, but out in the community. Maybe while playing, teaching them patience, because I remember they bought me all of these soccer balls and baseballs and all, and I'm like, what am I going to do? How am I going to
teach? Those are things people throw at each other.
Yeah. However, by playing these sport games or these board games, you're teaching them patience. You're teaching them conflict resolution.
So you're beating you're beating these kids and then having them use their anger management strategies and coping with losing to the skill master.
Yes.
Jose Lepe.
Yes. 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 And then at the same time, though, they also beat me. And so they're also learning how to be good team players.
Team players.
And so, and all of that's what I do. And what I always tell them is first we're going to do an activity and then we're going to do our skill.
Did you ever actually like poorly model losing? You know, you really wanted to win and you
once I
slipped away.
I almost did one time. But
tipped over the board.
Then I had to come
you
back.
You had to reframe.
I had to reframe and come back. It wasn't a game of chess. It was very heated, yes.
Yeah, yeah, which is, of course, the adult
yes.
always
yeah,
is supposed
to because I thought, like, you know what, I'm the adult here, and I'm going to let a 7-year-old
Ooh.
Or, yeah, 8-year-old. But, however,
checkmate.
This 8-year-old was very good at playing chess, so
good.
Then, you know, I modeled. I modeled that.
That's
know,
a lot of strategy. That's,
yeah.
I mean,
very strategic.
Strategic.
And I, you know, gave
my
hand out, and I said, you know what, thank you very much. Maybe you could show me. And so, you know, the modeling, that's also a big part of the skills coach, the modeling the behavior out in the community.
Now, so you've got these methodologies of teaching, you know, different coping management things that might reduce your anger, for example. Are you able then to see if it crosses back over into whichever environment it was a problem? Like maybe it was a problem at dinner time in the home and then say, okay, last week he threw his broccoli 4 times. And now this week he's only thrown his broccoli 2 times because we've played chess and he beat me.
Yeah. Well, the beauty of this program is that you have from the Department of Social Services, we have a social worker who's calling the foster parent daily. And so there is a computer program, and she asks her, you know, certain types of questions. Has a child been backtalking? Has a child been thrown? Has a child had, you know, anger outbursts? And she rates them. And so what happens is that she is, we call this person a PDR. The report is PDR.
Pretty darn reliable.
Pretty darn reliable report. It's a parent daily report. And what this report does is it generates the behaviors on a graph. So every week we're at the clinical team, we print out this PDR, parent daily report, and the graph, and we're able to actually see the behaviors either rise, and those are the behaviors we're going to work on, or we see the behaviors lower. And most of the time we're seeing the behaviors throughout months, of course, because, you know, as we all know, to change a behavior is not a week or two. It takes months.
It takes a while.
But we're able to see that in time, the behaviors that you started off with maybe at the peak are now lowering. So that's what I really love about this program is that we have that person calling daily, that social worker. She inputs it in the computer, and the computer gives us the feedback via graph.
You know, a big piece of that is getting this foster parents reporting then, typically, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you when the children are crossed back over into with their own parents, is that PDR then continued to see if it spikes or
that PDR is not continued, but however the parent continues with the program for 90 days and the child still receives the skills coaching from me just to see how they're doing, just to see if they're maintaining, And the parent also continues to receive the family counseling component, which is really important and crucial at that time to make sure that they're implementing the skills that they reviewed at the beginning to see if there's any problems. And so I think they're at the family counseling session, then the parent reports to the family counselor or the clinician what's going on, and then the clinician reports.
Do they do the family counseling with the child also?
No, they don't. They just do it with the parent, because they're teaching the parenting skills and the behavioral mod techniques that are being used in the foster home. So that way when the child is
returned
to the parent, then they already know what system they're using, and the system just continues.
It's an Excel child, not a Word child.
No, it's a very Excel child at that point, and they know, and the parent feels more confident. I think that's very important. So that when this child is returned, they feel very confident that, you know what, this is what works for my child, and this is what I'm going to continue to implement.
Well, and typically with these families, child management wasn't the compelling reason that the removal occurred in the first place. It certainly may be contributory, and child management, when you are leading a very distressed or distracted life, kind of gets backburnered. So what happens with the other parent issues, the ones that really were the ones about removal? How are those dealt with? Is that kind of external to the system, or?
What kind of those
external?
The methamphetamine habit, perhaps.
So then, by then, of course, the parent has already gone through rehab. They've already tested clean. They're already going to their AA meetings or NA meetings, and they have that strong support system. And you're right, when at the beginning, child management was not their main issue, was maybe the substance abuse. However, the substance abuse curtailed their parent management skills. So now that when they're sober, they're just like, what do I do? How do I manage this child? So what this program does is it gets that component and says, you know what? Now you're sober. Now you're good. Now we're going to teach you how to manage this child.
So how long do they stay in this program? Because, I mean, to get somebody sober takes a while. You know, it takes up to probably 9 months.
And it could be 9 months to a year, but it just, like everything else, it depends on the court system. It depends on the Department of Social Services recommendation. It also depends on what the court judge, orders. But most of the time we're seeing that it's like a 9 month, period that they're in the program.
So they're jumping in this program initially pretty hot.
Yes.
I mean, they're initially in either the end stages of use or perhaps the beginning stages.
They're still using, you know.
Oh, yeah,
just with alcohol, you know, not somebody that's alcoholic. You know, they need medical intervention, you know, to sober up. And, you know, that takes a long time, you know, those cravings. And in the meantime, they're trying to go to these family counselings, and they're like, I need a drink.
Well, and that's the thing, is that they're there actually for the support. They're there to help them with their child. And I think that's very motivating for the parent, knowing that, you know what, I have this group of people who are there, this group of people who
farther
are supporting
along the process.
Me. Yeah, who will get me back my child and who care about me getting back the child. Because a lot of the times when they come to our program, they see, oh, you're just part of the system. You're just part of. And so, you know, what the clinician Lillian does a very good job of is she develops that rapport, that buy-in from the parent, which is really crucial to the program. And so once she gets that buy-in, then you see the parent transform. And that's the important part.
How about parents? I mean, once they come or their kids are removed, are they willing to come into this program and see all the benefits that they can, all the assistance, the support that they can get, or are they kind of, no?
Well, some are hesitant because, like I said, they're just saying, like, you know, you're just here to tell me what to do. You're just another part of the system.
Well, and there's a shock and awe element for them, too, because they just had somebody swoop in and take away their kids. Yeah. That must be, like, a shock and awe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But then once that they see the components of the program, the family therapist speaks to them, tells them what they're going to do, and then they talk about, you know what, this is how I'm going to help you during the visits, because, you know, the parents still have the visitation rights, and she's like, you know what, I'm going to tell you how when little Johnny starts to act up at the visits, how you're going to calm him down. That really does engage the parent, because then it's a skill that the parent could use. And sometimes, like I said, it's not the parent who's the aftercare plan. It could be an aunt. It could be an uncle. It could
so
be
you're
a
willing
cousin.
To take however
yeah,
this thing proceeds.
There's
an option to support.
Sometimes parents aren't available.
Yeah. So as long as the main important components of this program is 7 to 11 in the foster care system with a behavioral problem that's impairing them in the community and school home, and they need to have an aftercare person or an aftercare plan. So this aftercare plan, we would all love for it to be the biological parents. It can be the biological parents, but it could be some other family member. But as long as they have the aftercare plan, that's really vital to this, because the family counselor works with the aftercare plan.
For 90 days after.
No, while they work with the aftercare plan during the whole process mm-hmm. that the child is still in the foster home.
Okay.
And
yes.
then once that...
What's this going to look like?
Once they're let back into the home, is they still continue for 90 days follow-up.
337-8874 is the phone number. KUVO, you're listening. Let's talk about it. I'm Scott. She's Maria. Over there is on my right side. Can you mm-hmm. see that? It's Jose Lepe. Jose is a mental health rehabilitation technician 3, and he's working with us. Multidimensional treatment foster care.
Yes, cool. Foster care.
Third time is the charm.
Yeah, say that 10 times.
No kidding. So
MTFC.
So it sounds like it's almost like this is a real solution-focused type of intervention strategy. Can you speak to that a little bit? Is that your sense in working in this?
I do see that this model is very solution-based. It's very strength-based, because we look at the strengths of the parents. Or the aftercare people. So it is a very solution-focused type of program. And I do believe that we're seeing the results, just in the child's behavior lowering, that this program is working, this evidence that we see is working, because the child is learning these pro-social skills and is utilizing them.
Is there... a sweet spot for referrals in this? I mean, you're looking at assessing children, and you're looking at assessing parents or caregivers or whoever that aftercare plan person is. Is there, are there parents that are too haunted by their problems to be, maybe they have severe mental health disorders, maybe they have severe addiction problems, to be effective in this program, and so we say, better not try it here.
There's not going
to
be an after...
Or are there kids that are just like, whoa, these kids are you know, they're going to duct tape the social skills master into the chair and dance on his head.
We haven't had that, and you know...
Good.
Are any kids listening
we
today?
We haven't had that, but you know, I have worked with cases that you know, they have problems, but you know, the beauty of it is that they don't show these problems with me, because we're on a one-on-one, mm-hmm. we're having fun, you know, we've already built that rapport, so they haven't duct taped me yet or super glued me to the seat.
Well, I mean, I think it's important because you're working with that age, that
yes.
7 to 11. Now, if you were to be working with the adolescents,
That could be,
you know,
a different story.
The 15, 16, yeah. 17-year-olds, they probably wouldn't.
They probably would duct tape me, but so far, so good. And then, like
you
I
got
said,
skills. You look good in duct tape.
Thank you very much. But I do think, though, that, like I said, the aftercare plan, if the parent's not available, then they look for the other viable aftercare.
So not available is kind of like code word for too messed up. Or whatever.
Or in prison.
It
might be in prison.
Well, I don't want to say messed up, or maybe the problems have gotten to the point where they're unable to participate in the program at this time.
Deported.
So we have that aftercare person.
Right. I guess, and that's why I was asking the question, because, you know, is this something where, you know, a person who's using methamphetamine to cope with a long-standing sexual abuse trauma, post-traumatic stress disorder, is that one of those people that's just going to be, what do you call it, like not available? I forget what your code word is for just not going to make it.
Well, they could be. But
so then you find somebody else.
What kind of resources do you have to throw at those parents, I guess?
Well, of course, we have our own adult services resources, which have skilled clinicians for the TFCBT, so maybe they could be...
Which is the IRRT for adults.
Okay, RRIT.
Well, you threw out more letters than I ever want to hear
on your
show again, ever.
Which is the, what is it,
Imagery Scripting and Reprocessing Therapy.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
For trauma.
So I'm probably using the kid version. But the thing is that we have...
So do you have effective systems, I guess, to assess those parents and make sure that they get locked into whatever evidence-based strategies that would promote?
Yes, we do. We have effective systems within our own system. Yeah. So maybe they are receiving the psychotherapy and adult services, and then they're receiving the family component with us to make sure that their needs are being met.
In other words, we have the resources.
We have the resources. We are the resource masters. So we provide them with the resources so that they could come over here and be able to be their best during the family counseling session.
Nice.
So that person with the PTSD because of the sexual abuse and the methamphetamine addiction that they're coping with could receive the services at adults with psychotherapy to address that and then come to our program for the family counseling session to deal with the child management, which was something that they didn't deal with before because they were dealing with other issues.
Sure. What about for kids that the skill master alone is not enough? You know, because some of these kids also may have sexual abuse. Some of these kids may have, you know, either
trauma
or other types of behavioral health disorders that require... not just skills training, require more intensive interventions.
And once again, we haven't encountered that, but when we do, we're prepared because we do have the Children's Services Department here at Behavioral Health. So maybe they do have, maybe they're going to Vista Sands and I see them after Vista Sands. Maybe they have a case manager. Maybe they're receiving a psychotropic medication from the psychiatrist or they're receiving the psychotherapy from the clinician.
So you guys would be aware of that, though.
Yes. We're all aware. Yes. We're all aware of that, and we're all working together. So if that occurs, then I always make time in my schedule to see the child and to work on the skill. But I'm also aware that if they need other services, to refer them and link them to other services. And we discussed this at the clinical meeting.
Okay. So for the parents, most of the services are provided out of the clinic itself, right? I mean, they come in for regular kind of psychotherapy appointments and stuff like that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is there a parenting group? Do the parents meet together as...
There is no parenting group. There's just parenting session or family counseling sessions with a clinician.
Parents all together.
Yeah. There isn't a parenting group.
Perfect.
But there's a foster parent support group, though. And they meet weekly. And it's the MTFC foster parents that come together and they have this support group with one another. And the one that heads this group is Florentino, and they all talk about the types of issues, problems, comments, challenges that are going on in their
homes.
Because I can see, you know, they're getting all these services. You know, let's say that the parents they need mental health services, they are getting that. They're getting stuff for psychotropic medication, but you also assist them in getting them basic needs, you know, shelter. Food, you know, how can these kids go back to them if they have, that they're lacking that?
Lose your Medi-Cal card, lose your kids,
exactly.
Lose your Section 8, lose
That's
your
what I'm saying.
And
That's
so,
what I'm saying is that, you know, if they're not having their kids, they're not getting any Medi-Cal. How can they pay for the rent?
And that goes with, because remember, this program works in partnership with the Department of Social Services. So the Department of Social Services always makes sure that the parent is stable, in a residence, maybe has a part-time job, has their Medi-Cal, has some sort of aid coming in, then for the child to be returned. So that part is the Department of Social Services.
So that means they make it an exclusion or something? You know, because if kids are removed, they have no Medi-Cal. They have no cash aid.
And I guess that's where they work with
them.
They work with them. And so that's the beauty of this program, is that we are working in conjunction with the Department of Social Services, because they're the ones that generate and bring the referrals to us.
And I think
you get these kids day one then, or sometimes does it take a few days for everything to work through?
It takes a few days to work through. But at the same time, sometimes we get these kids when they're already have been placed somewhere for a while, because, you know, it's a very time-consuming process to get the referrals. So, I mean, we may get these kids a couple months after their initial removal. We may get them when they're at a group home out of county. So the thing is, though, that these services are provided to these children while they're in the system, while they're being reunified with their aftercare plan. Because, I mean, I don't want to say with their parent. I want to say aftercare plan.
Whoever, because really,
it could be whomever.
As a skill master, do you take your show on the road? Do you go wherever?
Sometimes I feel like I'm a Vista Sands on wheels. I come to I go to them. I have the privilege of taking them out into the community, different locations in the community, and showing them these skills, practicing, modeling these skills. And what I love is the community-based part, the community-based intervention, where we go out there and we practice these skills in the community. So let it be, today we're going to learn how to have patience, and we're going to play a game of baseball. Because, I mean, that takes patience if you don't know how to bat, if you don't know how to. Or we're going to learn how to introduce ourselves to people, because this is a skill that maybe they weren't taught, how to properly introduce yourself to someone, say please, thank you. And I think that's the best part of it, is that the community has done very well in receiving these kids and giving them positive feedback.
Nice. Now, if people in the community were interested in this program, is this something that is generated inside of Department of Social Services or inside of Behavioral Health or both? Or is this something where somebody in the public, like a teacher in a school who sees a kid who's, they realize it has a foster parent and they see some trouble, can we access this from the outside?
Well, if you're interested in the program, you yourself can become, if you wish, an MTFC foster,
and I think that's
foster parent, and that's the
need we have.
Yes, there is a need, that because see, these children are placed in not just regular foster homes, but MTFC foster
unleaded
homes. Yes.
They're premium.
These are premium.
These are premium.
These are premium parents, foster parents. These are premium homes. And the reason that they're MTFC homes is because these parents are going to be utilizing the behavioral modification system with this child.
Reporting with this PDF reporting thing.
Yes, and reporting with the PDR caller daily and going to the foster care support groups daily. But the best part of being an MTFC foster care parent is that you have the MTFC supervisor. You could call them whenever.
Whenever there's a problem.
Whenever there's a
anything
problem.
Anything that happens with the child in the middle of the night at 3 o'clock in the morning, 4 o'clock.
Yes. So,
that's great.
So that's
but
that.
You can't call
that's
them to ask them what the weather's going to be like tomorrow.
Please do not abuse that system. You only call them when there's a, you know, an emergency or to report something.
The Red Sox couldn't win tomorrow? Or?
Yeah. No, but that's the beauty of this program, is that these foster parents really like this program because they see all of that support.
Do they get the financial compensation equivalent to the responsibility of the job?
Yes, they do. There is a
little bit more.
There's a good.
But they should be doing
financial
this, you know.
Component. But you know what though? I think. You're
never going to get rich being a foster parent. Let's put that out there right away.
No, you do this because, honestly, you really love children, and that's your passion. And
these kids are going to grow up one day, and we want them to be in the community and be, you know.
And be skill masters.
Thank you.
We don't want them to grow up because, you know, I work with the adolescents, and they have, you know, I work with a lot of probation kids. Most of them are all on probation, and it's. You know,
do you guys get an intergenerational feel to this? Do you see some of the cases coming through and have people with enough experience and time in the system to say, oh, I remember when their parents, or I remember when, et cetera, et cetera?
It takes 9 months, so yeah, it's pretty started one year ago. So
we haven't encountered that, but I think as the program expands and as we get more cases, because the maximum caseload that I could hold as a skills coach is 10, but that's because it's so intense. I see these children weekly for 2 hours out in the community, and it's intense. So, but I think as the program expands and it grows and maybe we get another skills coach, we will be seeing that intergenerational component come in. Right. But as of now, we haven't seen that.
Well, and if your skills coach stuff works, then these people will grow up to be skilled adults raising children in
with
safe
skills.
Ways.
With skills.
With skills, yes. And they'll have the pro-social skills, too.
And so their kids won't be going to the gray-haired Jose Lepe.
By then, I think I'll be using a little bit of touch-up for the gray hair. If I have hair, I'm going bald.
Implants.
Just for men.
The just for men and a little bit of Botox. So I'll still look the same.
Hobbling around playing baseball with the kids.
with a bad hip, but I'll still be doing it. Because that's honestly the best part of this program, is that I myself get to be a big kid. And I get to have fun with these kids and show them these pro-social skills in a new way, in a fun way. And so I think that I have the best out of everyone in the team. In the clinical team, I have the best job, and I wouldn't change that. Right. I love sitting on the floor and drawing, or, you know, playing baseball, taking them out to stores and introducing them and have them.
So if we offered you a position like right here, we might have a little drama because you'd be polite and say yes, but then really truly in your heart, you'd say no. And it
I would be all very vocal about it. No one's going to take this position.
Okay.
This is my position.
Sweet.
And I will fight tooth and nail for it.
Sweet. That's impressive to hear, because, you know, you want people with that kind of passion about whatever their job performance, whatever
working
their role
with kids
in their
and working
is.
And
so just hearing that is, you know, confidence level goes way up.
So one last thing, a call for people who, you know, we need foster care parents.
Yes. If you're interested, we need MTFC foster care parents. And this is something that is a great experience. This is the type of children that you will be helping. You will be able to get the support that a regular foster parent doesn't. You'll have a whole clinical team behind you. And most importantly, you'll be making a difference in this child's life. And that, I think, is the whole benefit of this program.
And they should call or write or...
They should call the Department of Social Services at the licensing, and they speak with Alejandra. She's, I don't know her last name. I'm sorry, Alex. We call her Alex, but she's the PDR caller and the MTSC parent trainer. But they could call Department of Social Services, speak with someone in licensing, and ask if they could be an MTFC foster parent.
Wow. Awesome. And they can contact you? Can they contact you?
They could contact our supervisor, Florentino Olivas, because, I really don't.
You're out and about.
I'm out and about, and I really, everything goes through Florentino. He is the filter. So any questions about the program, you can contact him at our children's services. Just dial 482-4000, ask for Children's Services, and then once you're transferred there, Florentino Olivas, MTFC.
And if our listeners missed any of that information, they can access that podcast.
That's right, KXLradio.com.
Yes.
Thanks for coming aboard, Jose.
Thank you very
much.
Thank you for having me.
Pleasure to speak with you.
It's always a pleasure to see you guys.
Yes, and for next week, we have the Chief Probation, Martin Crusay.
Yes, indeed.
So he's the Chief.
Great radio show.
Chief Probation.
Looking forward to that one.
So. Yeah, that'll be next week.
Yeah, Mario's already hiding under the table.
I know.
I wonder what that's about.
He doesn't want to get arrested.
Okay. Have a good week. We'll see you next week.
Okay, bye-bye.
You've been listening to Let's Talk About It. Heard each Thursday morning at 7:30 a.m. on KUVO 88.7 FM, Radio Bilingue. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXORadio.com.